This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, August 25th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, if you've been to the Harlow Platz Community Park in Boulder lately, you may have noticed a herd of goats chomping away at the landscape. It's part of a city program to control noxious weeds without using harmful chemicals. We'll also look at why securing trash and bird feeders are an essential part of living responsibly in an area adjacent to bear habitats. And our regular Wednesday feature, Naturally, with herbalist Brigitte Mars. A BBC update and commentary from Jim Hightower are at the bottom of the hour. And then it's Good Ol' CU with Joe Juhas. His guest today will be Professor David Thomas of DU and CU Denver. At 9 a.m., Miriam Schiff speaks with Marty Moore of Out Boulder County. Then at 9:30, the Morning Sound Alternative comes your way to bring you a mix of eclectic music until noon. That's all still ahead this morning after these headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
In Denver, school started back in session on Monday, and in the first 2 days, 10 students and 8 staff members have tested positive for COVID-19. Some schools in the Denver system started earlier, and nearly 50 more, including 12 students, tested positive in August. A district spokesman told the Denver Post that because of the situation, they are consulting with public health partners, but so far it's going well in keeping students in the classroom. Meanwhile, families of elementary students at the STEM school at Highlands Ranch have been told to prepare for the possibility of transitioning to virtual learning. Several students there have either tested positive for COVID-19 or presumed to be positive. Last night, the Boulder Valley School Board was updated on the start of the school year. The Daily Camera reports that Superintendent Rob Anderson and other district leaders said their goal is to keep students attending in person 5 days a week. Masks are required for all students and staff, regardless of vaccination status, as they are in the St. Vrain Valley School District. The Aurora Public Schools will require all employees to get vaccination against the coronavirus. The district's personnel officer told staff that those who are not fully vaccinated by early October will be disciplined. And on Monday morning, hundreds of parents in Douglas County gathered outside the school district building in Castle Rock, protesting a mask mandate for children 2 to 11 years old passed by the Tri-County Health Department. Nine News reports that many Douglas County parents have said that if the school district didn't reverse the mandate, they would pull their children out of school. Controversy has erupted at a private religious high school in Highlands Ranch over two teachers who were pushed out of their jobs, allegedly because they are gay. About 50 students at Valor Christian High School walked out of classes yesterday in support of volleyball coach Inoki Tonga. He told the Denver Post that the campus pastor and athletic director berated him over his sexual orientation, calling his gayness a danger to the school and children. According to Tonga, they also told him that parents pay too much to attend the school for their children to be coached by a gay man. Another former coach at the school has told 9 News that she was confronted by officials about her relationship with a woman and that she couldn't believe she was being questioned about something so personal. Lauren Brenner, who coached lacrosse, resigned last year because she felt the school was no longer a safe space for her. The Regional Transportation District has approved a study of a scaled-back plan for commuter rail service from Boulder and Longmont to Denver. Last night, the board voted 12-3 to approve $8 million to produce new data. Colorado Public Radio reports that Governor Jared Polis and residents in the Northwest metro area have pressured RTD to kickstart the project. Angie Rivera-Milpied, the chair of RTD, said that they did make a promise to the people in that area, but they have old data and information is needed to understand where they are and what is needed. Some RTD board members have said that the agency should abandon the proposed B-line extension entirely. The Mesa County Board of Commissioners has approved an extension of its contract with Dominion Voting Systems. The unanimous action by all the Republican board came after the protests of more than 30 who made public comments quoting from the Declaration of Independence and Scripture, urging the commission to choose a different equipment company or use hand counts instead of Dominion. Various agencies, including the FBI, are currently investigating allegations that Tina Peters, the Mesa County clerk and recorder, allowed the election security system to be breached. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that Peters has been in hiding since appearing at a voter fraud conspiracy event in South Dakota. Yesterday, allegations surfaced that a group of secretly funded political operatives have been illegally lobbying the state's redistricting commissioners. The Colorado Politics reports that a complaint was filed with the Secretary of State alleging that Frank McNulty, the former Republican Speaker of the State House of Representatives, and Greg Brophy, another former Republican legislator, have not formally registered as lobbyists. In 2018, Colorado voters approved the creation of an independent redistricting commissions, including the requirements that anyone who lobbies the redistricting commissioners must register and report their activity. An ozone action alert is in effect for today until 4 p.m. this afternoon. Higher concentrations of ozone are expected to be in the unhealthy for sensitive groups category. Sunny skies with highs around 90 today and mostly sunny tomorrow with a chance of afternoon showers tomorrow. Right now, it's about 60 in Boulder and a bit warmer in Denver and Fort Collins. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. One aspect that defines Boulder's outdoorsy culture is its wide-open spaces and ample parks. Maintaining all that land for public use is a big job, and it's not just up to humans. Weed control at Harlow Platts Community Park in South Boulder is currently in the hands, or hooves rather, of around 20 goats. Last Sunday, the city of Boulder hosted a so-called meet and bleat event for the public to get to meet the goats and learn more about the program. Natural Land Specialist Erica Carlson explains.
We have a herd of goats in the park in the natural areas. They are kept contained in an area that has noxious weeds so that they are helping us to control the noxious weed population. And today we're hosting what we call a meet and bleat, where people come, interact with the goats. We have a baby goat called Barbara wandering around, and then an adult goat that kids were able to milk. Just a chance for the community to interact and ask questions.
And many of the goats are behind an electric fence. Is there a contained effort to be able to move them to different parcels of this large park?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We contain them in an area that has a high population of weeds that we want them to eat. And once they've worked through that to amount we deem sufficient, then we move them on to try and cover different parts of the park.
So weed control, but as they go along, they're also leaving fairly nutritious manure in their wake?
Yep, that's true. Yeah, it acts as a kind of fertilizer for the ground. They also, their little hooves and areas will stomp the ground, a little bit of aeration. And they open up the understory of some of these non-native agricultural grasses that keep native plants from coming in. There's a seed bank in the ground that hopefully, with the opening up, native plants will have a chance to take hold.
And when did this effort begin?
So the city of Boulder has used goats for about 20 years. They've started out at the reservoir. And through the years, we've moved them around to different parks, some different areas that we need help with.
What other large pieces of open space do the goats help to maintain?
They have been at Christensen Park, Tantra Park, Maxwell, Stasio Ball Fields. There's a natural area around there. Those are the main parks that we have them in.
And what's the nature of the partnership with the farm that the goats are from?
Yeah, so this is the first year we've worked with this farm called Homestead Ranch. They supply the goats, all the equipment that they need for the goats, and we give them the land for grazing their goats and help prescribe a program to get the effect that we want on the noxious weeds. It's a great partnership, and it gives them exposure and places to keep their goats in the summer.
And while you're out here, you have a table full of literature about noxious weeds and just other information. What has been the nature of the interactions that you've had today with people as they come by your table?
It's been really positive. A lot of people have come by and they're like, oh yeah, we know about these noxious weeds. And it's great that everyone is in this area seems to be knowledgeable. It's also been really fun to inform people about You know, these plants that may be really pretty out in the natural areas or in your yard are actually plants that we don't want and they might take over. So it's been a really educational experience and really positive.
Are there any other programs that people should know about that are natural alternatives to the use of chemicals beyond just the use of goats?
Yeah, something else interesting that we use is called biocontrol. So we use a fungus to control Canada thistle. There's weevils that we get for another invasive species called Dalmatian toadflax. So we're trying to use innovative and new methods, as well as mowing and, you know, clipping seed heads to control our invasive weeds.
And what all goes into managing the open spaces here? It seems like a pretty big undertaking that maybe a lot of the folks, even the folks who routinely enjoy the open spaces, might not have a full understanding of what all goes into maintaining them.
Yes, it's a big job. A lot of it is in the planning, so understanding the weeds in the different areas and what we can do with the manpower that we have to control them. A lot of areas that you might see that have a lot of weeds, it's not that we don't know about it, it's just it's not either in our plan at the moment or, you know, we don't have enough time to get there. But it is a big job, and a lot of different organizations are working together to make this happen as well. So I'm with Parks and Recreation. Open Space Mountain Parks has a much larger amount of land that they work on, and they have lots of crews out there every day working hard in the summer to keep things as close to a more native state as possible.
The goats are from Loveland-based Homestead Ranch, co-owned by Heather Spiker.
How did you get involved with this partnership with the city of Boulder to bring out your goats?
I actually have a friend that used to have this contract, and she was just a little too busy. We've been doing this for about 5 years and was happy to take over that role for this year, and we're contracted out for the next 3 years with City of Boulder, so we're excited. This has been a really good experience for us, and we're happy to, you know, be part of the public and educate.
What are some of the most common questions that you get from members of the public?
The biggest thing is predation, you know, just a concern for their well-being. We do have electric fence, so that helps keep predation out and keeps the goats in.
And when you say predation here, who would be the predators?
We've had an experience already. Local dogs have actually been an issue, as well as coyote and fox. So it's been nice having the electric fence to keep all that out.
So a fox will try to take on a goat?
They don't necessarily try to take it on, but they definitely stalk them.
And today there's going to be a demonstration on how to milk?
Yes, ma'am.
What's been the reaction thus far? They've already gone through like one cycle of milking with the kids. Uh-huh. How are they doing?
They seem to love it. You know, the fact that they can actually touch a real udder and understand where the milk comes from that they drink is kind of a neat experience. So, you know, farm to table, if you will.
I was expecting these goats to be far more vocal. Why are these goats so quiet?
You know, they just do their job, and they're not hungry. They're not lacking anything. They're kind of like a baby. If they're taken care of, they're pretty quiet.
Anything else that you would like to add about the experience today or just the nature of the partnership in general?
I just, you know, overall, just a shout out to City of Boulder. I've just been really grateful to work with them. They've been very helpful and really good in partnership with setting up fence and just whatever needs done. So I'm grateful to have that and just the experience that the community can have. And again, kind of a farm to table experience of, you know, where does your milk come from? Where does your food source come from? And what are the goats good for besides just petting and playing with?
So it's better if you get behind her.
Most of the goats at the meet and bleat were behind electric fencing, but some others, including a baby named Barbara, mingled with the crowd. This year, kids, the human kids, were able to try their hands at milking the goats. Sarah and Lloyd Thrall brought their daughters, Ellie and Anna, to the event to meet the goats up close.
Ellie, you milked the goat?
No.
No. Why not? We tried. It was a little scary.
I did.
You didn't do it, but you saw it, right?
We watched. And we petted the baby goat.
What did you think about the baby goat? Was it soft or was it scary?
Soft.
Did you like coming out here to meet the goats today?
Yeah. Were they quiet or noisy?
They were quiet.
Quiet, kind of like us. Well, anything else that you'd like to add?
It was so cool that they let everybody come. Really great.
Hey, really cool of the town to do this. What a great thing for us.
Yeah.
It was the first time they've ever seen an animal milked. It was really cool.
The goats are chomping noxious weeds at Harlow Platts Park in sections and are expected to finish up by mid-September. You are listening to The Morning Magazine. Living next to the mountains means living in an area that overlaps with bear habitat. And that overlap can be deadly to bears who regularly venture into human spaces in search of food. That's why wildlife specialists are getting the word out about the importance of securing trash cans and putting away backyard bird feeders. At a recent farmers market day, KGNU's Rosanna Longo-Better spoke with Tyler Asnikar, District Wildlife Manager of Colorado Parks and Wildlife.
So the biggest thing that we find with bears in urban areas, you know, the bears were here first. They've always been around. So a lot of people don't realize that. They're new to the area or they just have never seen them. What they don't realize is some actions on their part, you know, not taking care of your trash, leaving bird feeders up, those things attract bears. That draws bears into populated areas. And over time, you know, what might have been a bear you saw in the yard, now it's coming up onto the deck. Pretty soon it's trying to get into the house, into the garage. Soon it's a human safety issue. And my only option at that point is euthanizing or relocating. Relocating is not very effective, right? The bears came because they couldn't find habitat that was open elsewhere. There's another bear already there. And so if we relocate, we run the risk of putting a bear on somebody else's, you know, home territory. That bear may kill it. They'll kill each other to defend their territories. Other thing that we see a lot is bears will come back to where they were relocated from. So they come right back, and in doing so, they've got to cross a bunch of roads. We see a lot get hit by cars, things of that nature. So even though we try to do something that on the surface is to the benefit of that bear, you know, even by not killing it, we're killing it, if that makes sense. And so we're trying to educate people here. You know, we've got these bear skins out. Most of these animals were either put down by wildlife officers or hit on the roads as well. So, you know, their deaths serve as an ambassador on the behalf of other bears to say, you know, if people don't do a better job, this will continue. And so if we can avoid that, we want to. You know, a lot of people think, well, if we call CPW, Coral Parks and Wildlife, they're just going to come and kill the bear every time. That's the farthest thing from the truth. What happens is, you know, the first time they see a bear, they don't call because they think that we're just going to kill it. And then the neighbor doesn't do the same thing. And you go down the line, and pretty soon this bear's been here for weeks, months, done all these bad things, gotten into trash, bird feeders, lots of bad habits. So when they finally call us, my only option is to euthanize that animal. If they call us up front, we can do community education. We can do site visits and say, okay, here's what the issues are. Let's fix the actual problem, which is not the bear, so that, you know, on behalf of these bears, so we can help these bears live longer lives. And so people are kind of their own worst enemy in those senses. And so if you call us sooner, then I don't have to kill the bear because we can talk about the root of the problem, which is human behavior. So any opportunity I get to do that, we try to take advantage of. You know, being here at the farmers market day is a great opportunity. Lots of folks coming through we get to chat with and educate them on what they can do better for the betterment of the bears.
What are the three main things that you will suggest to the residents here in Boulder that we must do in order to take care of these beautiful animals that right now, when there's smoke in the air and the forests are getting burned, I'm pretty sure their activities are different, huh?
So yeah, it's pretty local, right? So the wildfires that we're seeing the smoke from here are from out of state, essentially. It's blowing in. And we do have some smaller ones throughout the state. You know, last year was a really bad fire year here, though. But it's pretty short-term effects, right? It pushes them out as the fires are burning. As the spring comes back, we get a lot of new regrowth, which is actually really good habitat. It's things that the bears can eat, the deer, the elk, all the animals. You know, it's really good for them in that sense. So it's not necessarily just in fire years. We've been really lucky this year. We had a lot of spring rain. We didn't have a late frost, and so, you know, wild berries, wild fruits, they're doing really well. And so that's actually lessening the impacts here in town. But we will always have bears in and around Boulder, right? That's never going to change. And so, you know, a couple things that we see, trash and bird feeders are the biggest ones. You're not securing your trash properly. Even if you have a bear-resistant can, if you don't use it right, then you might as well not use it at all because the effect is the same. The bear will get to the trash. The bird feeders are the other one. That's bird seed. That's hummingbird feeders with the liquid. That's the bird suet. All things on a bear's mind are nice, tasty treats. They can get the same amount of calories from a single bird feeder as they can, you know, an entire day of picking berries, you know, in the wild. And so given a choice of working all day for the same food or going eating for 5 minutes and getting the same calories, because that's all they're cared about, it's a pretty easy choice, right? It's if you have to go out and harvest your own food versus going to a fast food restaurant, which one are you going to pick if you're hungry now and I need to eat real quick? So taking care of those two things, and like we talked about, reporting it, and that's, you know, reporting to us, the authorities, but also talking to your neighbors about it. You know, if they're new to town, if they just don't have that same experience with bears, education is a huge thing, and so doing your part to educate neighbors. You know, if you're not comfortable, the neighbor maybe doesn't want to hear what you have to say, that's fine. If you tried or if it didn't work, you know, call us for those same reasons. We're happy to go and have those conversations that need to be had in order to educate folks for the betterment of the bears.
Thank you so much for the explanation. And you see, again, you have tons of kids touching the skin of the bears and really interesting. They are the best ambassadors, huh?
They really are. And it's an unfortunate, you know, set of circumstances that led these bears to die. But the kids love the tactile part of it. They get to come and pet a bear, which, you know, there's really nowhere else you could go and do that. So having these skins helps draw in the kids, bring the parents in with them so we can actually have a meaningful conversation with parents. And yeah, the kids and the bear hides here are what's really driving everything. They're the real champions of the day.
They also get stickers, huh?
Yeah, everybody loves stickers, so we've got plenty of those too for the kids to help out. And it's a reminder too, you know, that sticker, as the parents, you see it on the fridge or on something to the kids, like, oh yeah, you know, I need to put the trash out at the right time or something. You know, just those little reminders can help long term with those educational points.
Thank you so much. I have been speaking with Tyler Asnikar, District Wildlife Manager, here at the Farmers Market, where a lot of people have been coming, touching the skin of these dead bears, but getting an education at the same time in how we need to take care of our trash and our bird feeders and everything else so that our bears will not need to be relocated or die. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo-Better.
It's time now to check in with Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars, and I know we're being bombarded with all kinds of ideas on how to take care of our health, but I thought I would just give you some ideas on what you might do if you get sick or you think you're coming down with something. Well, first thing I would do is stop using dairy products. They tend to create a lot of phlegm, and that's not what you need when you think you're going to be under the weather. There are so many herbs that help to fight pathogens, and I think of formulas like yin shao, cold snap, cold quell, but the individual herbs are going to be things like Echinacea, Isatis, Baptisia. Maybe it's time to pay a visit to the health food store and just be sure that you are stocked up on all kinds of good things. We've been hearing a lot about the importance of vitamin C. That's nothing new. But also vitamin D, which we get from being exposed to sunlight. Yes, sunlight is a great healer. And if you ever see me standing on a street corner with my mouth wide open, I'm actually directing some sun rays into my throat for its antimicrobial properties. I know, some of these remedies are free and really don't cost anything at all. Zinc is wonderful, but if you're fighting off an infection, you would prefer to use zinc lozenges because zinc in the mouth will inhibit the replication of cold and flu viruses. Elderberry syrup is good tasting. I love it. If I think I'm coming down with something, I take a little shot and I sleep so deep. What's good to eat when you're sick? Well, I think of baking a sweet potato and adding 4 or 5 cloves of raw garlic. Yep, cooked garlic, not nearly as medicinal. So forget garlic toast, okay? We're looking for raw garlic. I also love miso vegetable soup, sautéed onions with curry powder or chili powder, applesauce with cinnamon, because cinnamon is also an antimicrobial agent. Anything that is high in the sulfur minerals, such as broccoli, cabbage, mustard greens, rutabaga are wonderful. Mashed rutabaga, anybody? Also, essential oils can be very helpful. If you diffuse them, then you're taking in those powerful essential oils into your lungs to help fight off those nasty pathogens. My favorite is eucalyptus. So there are things you can do rather than just worrying and waiting. You might give nature a try. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Jamie Sudler, Rosanna Longobetter, and Brigitte Mars for their work on today's program. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25.